It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, Wes and I today are going to demystify, as we say here at the program, the durable power of attorney. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to be said about this document. There's a lot of confusion about mm-hmm. a power of attorney.
Right.
And so let's talk about that. Let's decipher this a little bit. First of all, our listeners need to know that a power of attorney is a legal document whereby you appoint an agent, mm-hmm. and that is the new terminology under the new statute, which became effective January 1, 2018.
Okay.
That we, as a competent person, appoint an agent mm-hmm. to handle our financial affairs if for any reason we are unable to. You also, of course, mm-hmm. it can be just a matter of that it's just not convenient.
Mm-hmm.
The principal is out of town or out of the country. There's going to be a real estate closing, something of that nature. That can also be a time when a power of attorney is used. But most of the time, they're used in the context of someone who is elder in nature, someone who is unable to continue to handle their affairs due to a sickness and illness. Mm-hmm. And of course, they now need their son or daughter or whoever their agent happens to be to come in and handle their affairs. Now, it is true that there is a new durable power of attorney statute in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Our legislature, excuse me, late last year, a whole new section, if mm-hmm. you will. Wasn't really a modification as much as it was just a complete rewrite
mm-hmm.
of the power of attorney statute in the state of North Carolina. And we are now having some experience with that. We're into that, about 3 months now.
Right.
Frankly, I was just telling Wes out front that we aren't seeing a lot of changeover in our office. We certainly are operating under the new document mm-hmm. and are using the new document for all of our clients who are needing a new power of attorney. They sign under the new statute, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But as to the practical day-to-day workings of the new statute, our powers of attorney, Ben, as we've talked about on the program here so many times, were already extremely specific. You know, they had gifting language and they had the right to create trust and to modify or revoke revocable or irrevocable trust. Our powers of attorney tended to be very specific at our office, the ones that we drafted and used for our clients. And so we're not seeing as much change as maybe some folks are, because that was what the new Power of Attorney Act was somewhat about, the concept of the fact that the power of attorney must spell out with specificity exactly what the powers are.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a good thing for folks who were operating under the assumption that these general grants of power were okay. Again, here trying to kind of demystify all of this, you can begin to see that a little bit complicated here what we're talking about.
So the more recent legislation requires some of these things that you were already doing?
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It requires these things to be in writing in the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, we probably aren't going to see as many generic powers of attorney as we may be used to see.
Mm-hmm.
That were prepared by folks who were not using this very specialized language. We, on the other hand, at Harvell & Collins, were using the specialized language, so we're not too overwhelmed by this new statute so far.
So powers of attorney that you were developing in recent years anyway were already
specific,
compliant.
Right. Now, questions that we get are things like, you know, I'm 35 years old. I'm 40 years old. Do I really need a power of attorney? And the answer is absolutely, because, you know, any of us can be in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Any of us can suffer, unfortunately, a sudden illness.
Right.
And if we do, then someone needs to have the legal authority
mm-hmm.
to handle our affairs.
And yeah, I know y'all have talked about really anybody over 18 ought to probably go ahead and do that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you are, you know, once you have a power of attorney, then your agent begins to act consistent with the law, and of course, consistent with what we call in the law the fiduciary duty.
Mm-hmm.
And the fiduciary duty is, we've talked about before, is kind of a reasonable person standard.
Mm-hmm.
What would a reasonable person do under all of the attending circumstances? What kind of good choices would they make? We've said before on the program, Ben, that, you know, if it's your land or your money,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of do what you please with it.
Right.
If you want to sell it for a certain price because you need the money,
right?
Then you're able to do that when you're in control of your own
mm-hmm.
properties. But when your agent is in control of your properties, there's a heightened duty. We have the case in our office right now where we have an elder gentleman who had kind of made a verbal deal with his neighbor
mm-hmm.
about what he would sell his property for.
Right.
And yeah, now, bless his heart, that didn't get done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, he is not competent, and his agent under his power of attorney is acting. And she keeps telling us, well, but he would have sold it to him. That's what they kind of agreed on. Well, we're saying, well, we need something in writing that would verify that.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Agent.
Right.
Because if you sell it for less than the tax value, less than the fair market value, it could be alleged that you have violated your fiduciary duty.
Self-dealing.
That's a classic example of what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The elder gentleman could have sold it for any price.
Right.
It's his property to do with as he pleases. But an agent or a fiduciary has to act according to a different and a more heightened standard.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine then these are the arguments where litigation comes in eventually, right?
It does, Ben. You know, I'm the guy here, Mr. Mm-hmm. Collins, talking, mm-hmm. who deals with the litigation side of this. And you know, 9 times out of 10, if not higher than 9 times out of 10, we don't have problems with mm-hmm. folks abusing powers of attorney. You know, we don't have issues with the child who's been named as the attorney, in fact, you're taking mom or dad's money.
Mm-hmm.
Most people act upright. They do what they're supposed to do. But there are those somewhat rare cases where there's some, you know, greed involved, abuse of the power of attorney, overreaching with regard to use of it, and those type of things. Cecil deals more in our office, Mr. Harvell here, with obviously the document preparation, dealing with the family, and I do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the lead attorney for all these litigation matters when things kind of spin off into a place where we wish they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say there's really two different categories of these type things that we see. Sometimes we see situations where there's a use of a power of attorney, and the principal has passed away, and through the power of attorney, there was an attempt to change maybe some estate planning. It could be that there were some beneficiary designations changed on life insurance or annuities,
mm-hmm.
or it could be that there's a trust set up and
sure.
things directed through a trust. And really, our North Carolina general statutes address that pretty well, in that you can't use the power of attorney to upset someone's existing estate plan.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be consistent. So in many cases at Harvell and Collins, you know, we're dealing with situations where it's very important to do some asset protection regarding, for example, the home or other real property, because the person has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia, or just an interest in the family to do that. Well, we're very careful that when we when we use trust and where documents are being signed through power of attorney, which is sometimes necessary, that the documents that are put in place are consistent with the existing will.
Right.
Or if there is no existing will, consistent with the way the assets would pass through intestacy, meaning no will. So because the statute does catch that, it does keep you from being able to change the estate plan. You know, the other thing, the other area where I see that come up where there's some misuse of the power of attorney is just during the principal's lifetime, you know, just taking the person's money.
Right.
Just using the money to pay your bills.
Yeah.
You know, going to, you know, get it, you know, get a
new car. They feel like they're going to get it anyway.
Get a new car, you know, do whatever. And, you know, where the rubber hits the road, Ben, with regard to that is when do we learn about it? Mm-hmm. I mean, let's say that we have the, you know, the brother or sister out there is acting as the attorney in fact and is misusing that power of attorney. And then the other brother or sister, sibling, mm-hmm. whomever, kind of gets an idea that something's going on here. It doesn't seem quite right. You're the power of attorney, but it looks like that, you know, dad is not in maybe in a condition to be able to deal with these type things.
Yeah.
But where'd you get that new car from? Or, you know, those type mm-hmm. issues. So you look to the power of attorney in that type situation to see if you have the right to an accounting. Sometimes there's language in the power of attorney that gives you the right as a family member to get an accounting, to get mm-hmm. bank records, those kind of things.
And that power of attorney should be on file?
Before it's used, it should be on record, so mm-hmm. it should be public record. Or just as we always say on this program, have a discussion, you know, mm-hmm. with the power of attorney and see if that person is willing to provide information about how it's being used. I know sometimes that's a difficult thing to do, but it's usually good advice to do that early as opposed to later on.
Okay. So. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with more again with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. The right advice at the right time. If you want to call and make your appointment, you can call them at 726-9050 and 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City. Hey, welcome back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And Wes, you were talking about power of attorney and some of the things that come up to
the things that come up. We were talking about, you know, the attempt to use a power of attorney to go change estate planning. You really can't do that. The statute, you know, captures that. And then when you get into the situation of, you know, misuse of the principal's money, you know, during their mm-hmm. lifetime, we were talking about the fact that it's important to inquire about that and be transparent. In the event that the agent won't be transparent with you, won't give you information, that's a sign, mm-hmm. obviously, if they're acting upright and acting in a way that's in the best interest of the principal and in their appropriate with their fiduciary capacity, then they should be happy to show you bank records, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But in the situations where you have potentially a misuse of a power of attorney and we don't learn about it, mm-hmm. until after the person, the principal, has passed away, or after the person, the principal has become incompetent or to the point where they can't remember things, then the canned response that we always get is, we probably can guess what it is. Well, yeah, Daddy said I could do this.
Right.
Oh, we agreed. Mm-hmm. You know, so on and so forth. And so then you get into an issue of what you can prove about, you know, whether Daddy, in fact, mm-hmm. said it was okay for you to use that $200,000 to pay off your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, those kind of things. Those kind of cases, they're interesting. You would think that they would be difficult cases to prove. But in my experience, if you end up before a jury on those type things, juries like equality. They like things to be equal. They assume that, you know, obviously if there are two kids, then the assets are going to pass to the two kids,
mm-hmm.
especially if there's a will that says that. And most people have their estate planning set up that way, you know, all to each other, spouse, and then equally to the kids. I mean, obviously, we have situations where they're second and third marriages, and that that changes that. But, you know, when you have that one child who is who's overreaching, and you can prove that they were over, or prove that they benefited significantly at least, and their only argument is that, you know, my elderly dad or my elderly mom said that that's what they wanted me to do, that's not a really strong position to take. So we end up in that situation. I've got lots of those files going on at any given time, lots of those type situations that we're dealing with. Most of the situations when we're dealing with the use of a power of attorney, there aren't problems at all. Powers of attorney are very important. In the event you don't have a power of attorney and you get to a point where you lose capacity and someone has to handle your affairs, then we have to spin off into a guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
Guardianship is much more time-consuming, expensive. There's uncertainty with the guardianship. Obviously, you're not picking the person who's handling your affairs for you. So having that power of attorney, which is a very inexpensive document in the grand scheme of things, certainly is advisable.
Now, you mentioned about power of attorney is filed. It's not really effective until it gets filed, or it needs to be filed anyway to show its proof.
I mean, normally what we do, there's different types of powers of attorney. Some of them have springing powers in them where they're not effective at all until there's a determination, maybe by two doctors, that the person is in need. Our powers of attorney don't have springing language in them, that you know, the ones that we prepare. But you know, the way this normally works is the person signs the power of attorney. It's held. We hold this in our vault system, and in the event that the person needs it at some point in time in the future, 5, 10 years later, even a year later, whenever it may be, then that document then gets recorded, and that's when it becomes brings life into it to the point where it can be used for all purposes.
So the document is legal at the time that it's signed.
Right.
I mean, it's signed, it's notarized, it's dated. But there is a requirement under our statutes that there be public notice that you now are serving as an agent under a power of attorney, to put the public on notice that this is the person who is handling the legal affairs of another.
Right.
So there's a recording requirement. And most, I mean, I would say that, you know, this is not well known with probably everybody listening to our program this morning, going to work, dropping their kids off at school. But if you work in a bank, if you work at one of the financial planning companies, the stockbroker companies, et cetera, these folks generally know, they've had experience now, and they know that, well, Mrs. Jones, this is a great power of attorney. I see it signed and dated, but it hadn't been recorded yet.
Yes.
Why don't you run on over to Beaufort and record it, you know, or get with your lawyer, you know, Mr. Harvell, and have him record it. They know that it has to be recorded.
I can see, though, where somebody might download a power of attorney online or something, and have it signed, have their elderly relative or so sign it, and then act like it, but never actually record it. So
happens all the time.
Yeah,
and you know, it really doesn't. They don't run into a problem until they end up at the bank,
right?
Or until they end up
Department of Motor Vehicles,
Or they end up trying to sign
file the tax return, Internal Revenue Service,
right?
You know, all of those things. And then, of course, Ben, there are times that we have an elderly client in the office signing a power of attorney. Maybe they even come through our parking lot and we go out to the car and have them sign the document. And the document in those circumstances, of course, is recorded, you know, later on that day.
Yeah.
Because it's obvious that that person is really needing to have their agent take over immediately.
Yeah.
And so those would be recorded.
Yeah. Again, you may have the document prepared and it's in your in your possession. You just don't use it yet until need to.
Well, exactly.
Right.
Because we don't want to get to the point where we don't have the capacity to sign anything, any legal documents anymore. Then it's too late. Then we're stuck in a guardianship posture.
Okay. We'll have a short break. We'll come back with more on power of attorney as we talk about this. If you would like to ask a question, Kenzie will take your call, 800-818-2255, or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
About 4 or 5 minutes left here as we're talking about the power of attorney. And again, some of the changes made by the state legislature, you guys have already incorporated many of those changes, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what we see sometimes is, Ben, you know, we see these statutory short form powers of attorney, mm-hmm. and folks, you know, might be used to seeing those. They might have seen those before. They're kind of the document basically that has a list of about 10 or 15 powers on the front of the right. document, then you can initial which ones you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the
boilerplate.
Yeah, very, very standard but thin document.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that we've dealt with our power of attorney over the years is that as cases come down from the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court dealing with particular issues, such as good example would be gifting. I mean, mm-hmm. there used to really not be anything relative to the precedent as far as making a gift through a power of attorney until I think probably 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
Some of
wow.
the cases started coming down with regard to that, indicating that you had to have certain language, and that's a good example. So we want our power of attorney to have that language. You know, other things as far as establishing trust, sometimes it's necessary later on in life to have the right through a power of attorney to set up a trust. You mm-hmm. need to have that kind of language in the power of attorney. There's some cases and statutes on that. So the bottom line with regard to this is that when we sit down with our clients and talk about a power of attorney, we talk to them about the things that they may need mm-hmm. in the future. And we put a very strong emphasis on making a determination as to who's the best person to serve as your attorney. In fact,
right,
who
right.
do you really trust? Who's going to be the person that's going to be in that, you know, the 9 out of 10 category, everybody doing everything right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to name the, you know, the child who used to be an alcoholic or mm-hmm. had a drug issue, you know, as our attorney. In fact, I mean, because there's too much of a propensity there maybe that we would be concerned about.
Right.
So back to the issue of, you know, dealing with specific issues, you know, what we've done over the years is periodically we sit down and kind of as a group in the law firm as the attorneys looking at various cases and styling new language consistent with the new cases so that the document kind of lives and breathes with the way that the court is directing us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the document had evolved over the years. And then January 1, 2018, the General Assembly puts in place the new statute with mm-hmm. regard to this, and a lot of the things, you know, really almost all of the things that have changed in the law with regard to that we had already gotten to that point,
right?
You know, as time went, we just did not have, oh, this is a form document, we're going to use the same one every time. No, we kept it up to date mm-hmm. as the law directed us to do so.
About the only thing that really changes again is that nomenclature, just saying an agent, really.
Yeah. So, yep. I mean, there is definitely in the statute effective January 1, 18, you know, a document that we are generally to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you modify and amend and add on from there.
Okay. You want to find out more? You want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins? Make that appointment at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street, Morehead City.